thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and joining me today is author Christine Whitehead. She is here to talk about her novel, Tell Me When It Hurts. Christine is a lifelong resident of New England and a graduate of Smith College in Northampton, Massachusetts. She attended University of Connecticut Law School and has practiced divorce law in Hartford, Connecticut, for over 25 years. Christine says she has always been interested in how people cope with heartbreak. Her own pain started early at 7 when her parents died 5 months apart of unrelated causes. A bitter custody battle pitted maternal grandparents against paternal aunts, and within the space of 6 weeks, Christine and her sister were shipped off with her aunts to a strange land called Connecticut. Raised by loving relatives with the best intentions, her uncle's long-standing drinking problems created many family secrets and dark corners. From anorexia to obsessive achievement at Smith College to maintaining maximum defenses against close encounters of any variety, Christine careened gently through her 20s and 30s, ultimately finding her own serenity in a divorce law practice, in writing, and in her animals. She currently lives on a farm outside Hartford in a 1765 colonial home with her two dogs, two horses, and significant other. And her website, where you can find out more about Tell Me When It Hurts and her personal endeavors, is tellmewhenithurtsbook.com. So I want to welcome you to the program, Christine. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Wonderful. So this is actually your first novel.
It is my first novel, yes.
But you've done a lot of writing, it sounds like, in the past. So tell us about the writing you've done and how you progressed to actually doing a full-fledged novel.
As a divorce lawyer, I write all the time. I'm always writing. It happens to be real stuff. And I progressed to writing some short stories that I did not publish. And then when, actually, the reason I wrote this book is I was in an airport and couldn't find, there were great books, but I couldn't find something I wanted to read. And I said, I'm going to write that story that's been circling around in my head. And so I did. And I sat down, and over the course of a number of years, I wrote Tell Me When It Hurts.
Well, what was it that you weren't seeing on the shelf you included in this book? Was it themes or...
The reality is I was in the airport in Scottsdale, Phoenix, Arizona, and all that I could find to read to get on the plane coming back to Connecticut was either The Devil Wears Prada, which are wonderful books, or Bridget Jones' Diary, or John Grisham, or Robert Ludlum, also wonderful books. But they weren't what I wanted to read. I wanted to read about two middle-aged people who have problems, and they're good, decent people, and they find love again. And I couldn't find anything like that. And so I said, you know, there's this story that's been kicking around my head. I know the beginning. I know the end. I just have to write the middle of it.
Fill it in.
I just have to fill it in, which
you did.
This book, yeah.
And so I've heard you say or read somewhere that you consider this anti-chick lit.
I do, yeah. In the sense that, and I love chick lit, believe me, I find nothing more fun than to whiz through one of those books. But I call it the anti-chick lit in that it's not about the 20-something madcap girl looking for Mr. Right. It's really about someone who's been kicked around a bit by life, and she meets someone who's also had his own challenges in life and disappointments. And the men in the book, who are all really wonderful men, they're not the bounders or the, you know, the cads that you sometimes encounter in a lot of chick lit. And they're trying to find their way through the forest, just like the main character is Archer, the same way that Archer is. And so I view it as definitely, if all you want to read is chick lit, this would not be a book for you. But that's nothing against chick lit. It's got its place, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, it sounds like you bring a lot of reality into this book.
I do. It was funny because I was at a book reading at a library, and someone said, so are you a member of the NRA? Are you a vigilante? Are you a... And it's, you know, what I say to people is I understand vigilantism, and the legal technicality situations in the book, which some perpetrators get off on legal technicalities, they were real. The facts are made up in my head, although a lot of the legal situations are definitely based on real-life cases. And so there's a lot of reality to that. There's a lot of reality to the attachments of the people to their animals and the curative powers of that and the passion that Archer has for her riding, since I feel that same passion.
And the emotional journey that these two characters take.
They take a really hopeful journey, and they both take it. Connor, the hero in the book, is taking his own journey to try to find. He's kind of dead to his emotions, but he hasn't had tragedy, but he's let his daughter, whom he really has never known, kind of drift away because he just didn't get connected in that way. And he is brought back into how important those ties are. And Archer, she's really damaged. She has her own, slowly through the book, she starts reconnecting with her work, with her sister and family, whom she's pretty much stayed away from, to her passion to horses, and to just her connection to being alive again. And they both kind of take this journey together, and they're at different points on it, but they really help each other to reconnect again and relive and find the passion that they both enjoyed in life before, you know, they did get kicked around by life.
So how did you come to know Archer's character and develop her? How long had she been kind of swirling around?
She'd been swirling around for a while, and I knew that there would be a horse that helps her through this, her daughter's horse. And she had another book reading. Someone said, so how much of you is there in Archer? There's a lot in the sense of her career history, her educational history, her love of horses, her her quick wit that you see before her daughter died, and then you see her turn away and try to just survive. She's no longer trying to really heal. She's just trying to get through the next day by drinking and being isolated and living in her cabin.
She really does isolate herself.
She does. And then she joins a rather upscale vigilante group that tries to right the wrongs that the justice system didn't get right the first time. And she has a passion for that, but it's not really helping her get live again. It's helping her have something to live for, but she's not really able to redraw a place in her life. So there's parts of her that are certainly from me, but a lot of it is, you know, fiction, and I certainly have not done the things she's done. Fortunately, I've not had that kind of tragedy in my life, but I'm a divorce lawyer, so I see the pain that people go through when they've lost. They've had all kinds of losses. And so some of that is drawn into Archer. And then bit by bit, she gradually, you know, starts, I say it's reconnecting the dots of her life. They've all been snipped, you know. She's divorced. She's lost her family. She's lost her daughter. She's lost her interest in her riding. And she starts reconnecting those lines as the book goes on. And at the end, she's come full circle.
She comes full circle. I was wondering how much of the work that you've done over the last 25 years, how much of your interactions with clients really made it into this book, just like the emotional journey aspect of it. You must see a lot in the work that you do.
I do see a lot, and it really is, and it did get into the book. You see people come in, and they're really quite broken, and even no matter which side of the divorce they're on, the one who wants it or the one who's didn't want it but is compelled into it, or sometimes both people want it, but they really are bewildered, and they really don't know if they're going to be able to rebuild, and it's a lot different if it's an 8-year marriage or a 37-year marriage, but they just don't know where their next step will be, and they're concerned about money, they're concerned about their family, they're concerned about that they've lost love in their life, and it really is It's refreshing, it's sustaining, and it's really remarkable, actually, that after working with people on their case for 6 months to a year, sometimes a year and a half, you know, they really come through it with some new ideas about what they want to do. I had a woman the other day who, you know, she's always lived in Connecticut. She goes, I'm moving to Washington, D.C. Another one said, I'm moving to Aiken, South Carolina. I'm taking my horses. She was a horsewoman, too. I'm starting over. Mm. And it was in the best possible sense. And I think, you know, Archer really thought her life was over. She was just waiting for how it was going to end, but she didn't much care. She probably wasn't going to kill herself, but she really didn't care if someone else did it for her. And she comes full circle in the year. The book covers a year in her life from a September to a September. And she comes full circle to finally realizing, I'm going to make peace with this. I'm going to forgive myself, and I'm going to honor Annie, not by just sort of wallowing here and fading away, but by affirming life. And it's what my clients do, and most of them do, and it really feels good, and it really is beautiful to see.
What do you think it is that makes them take a more constructive path as opposed to the destructive choice, which some do take?
I think it really depends on what you've brought to the table. I mean, some people need the revenge, they need the drinking, they need the religion to fill in certain gaps. Mm. But I think most people, the thing that I think makes the difference is some people, for whatever their makeup, come into most situations with hope. And Archer really came into this with no hope. She had, I mean, her life was over as far as she was concerned, and her only real connection was her dog. I mean, that was what she took with her. It was the family dog, and that was the one thing that made her smile. Not much else made her smile. And as she started developing some hope, and as my clients start developing hope, they start to believe in second chances. That, you know, maybe it won't be what it was, but maybe I will have a second chance for love, for passion, whether it's in your work, whether it's with your family, whether it's with your friends, whether it's with your, you know, animal training, that maybe I will have a second chance in my life. And I think that's what makes the difference. And Connor, too, he finds he might have a second chance to know his daughter. And he's going to try to grab that second chance for whatever it holds for him.
It's so interesting. So do you think that there's almost a redefinition of what love means at this point when you go through a divorce and you've been emotionally broken and you are in that rebuilding phase?
I do think so, and I think it's a matter of, I think you get maybe it's a smaller, maybe it's a bigger definition, I'm not sure, it depends on how you look at it, but I think, you know, at the beginning, you know, Archer's first husband's Adam, and they all thought the world was their oyster and it was all ahead of them, and then when, you know, you've had some knocks and you've had some disappointments or you've had some tragedies, I think you realize love can come in some smaller bites, and you know, it's not that the graph keeps going up and the happiness gets happier and happier and happier. Mm-hmm. You realize that there's, you know, ebbs and flows, but grab that bite of happiness and love. And at one point in the book, Connor says, if this is all there is, Archer, it's just this wonderful 6 months that I will never, ever, no one can take it from me. Mm-hmm. And I think you kind of say, I can rebuild. It may not be what the first love was, but it could be better. It could be, it's just a different kind of love. Or maybe it'll only be for 6 months, but it's worth it. It's worth taking the chance to see if you can grab that little sliver of happiness there.
Mm-hmm. This really is a story of healing. It really is beautiful.
It is a story of healing, and it really is. It, you know, someone said, is it a sad book? And it, to me, it never was a sad book. There's sadness, of course.
Mm-hmm. That's life.
Yeah, it's life. It's built on a kind of tragic event.
Yeah.
But it happens before the book opens. You know Annie has passed, and it's still a tragedy. But there's some really funny moments, some really not ha 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 funny, but sweet moments. And the relationship that develops between Connor and Archer is very light. It's very fun. They have some emotional moments, but they really are bringing out, because neither of them were part of the tragedies that brought them there.
Mm.
So they are able to develop a relationship of their own that starts out rocky, but it really becomes a, you know, Hepburn and Tracy kind of.
It's something totally new to them.
Yes, mm-hmm. It's something good. It's healthy. It's light. It's they're supporting each other. And when he has his down moments about the things that have happened to him, she's able to you know, point out some of the strengths he's got and joke him out of it. And he does the same for her and is really supportive of her. And that's what I mean about some of the men just being so wonderful in the book. And They're just really mutually supportive of each other.
They're great characters. So how easy or difficult was this story to actually write?
You know, it's kind of funny because there were parts of it, you read about writers who say parts of it wrote itself. Parts of it wrote itself. I got to know the characters, especially Archer, so well that I would write and it would just be very easy to write. Other parts, not so much. And you read it the next day and you go, oh, that's not so good. but I had a rough outline, and then I started sketching in more detail. And I had an editor who was very helpful, who at one point said, give Archer more background as to how she knows so much about guns, about angles, about conditions, about hiding her tracks. And that created a whole chapter that really is pretty integral about how she got her training, how she was called out of college.
Mm.
And it's interesting when I go to book clubs who read the book and then they invite me to speak, and I've been really interested in the reactions to some of the characters, and women really like, I don't know if you've read the book, but Peter Bennett, who is the mentor for Archer and basically teaches her to be an assassin. And women really like him. It's like you like Peter? And they go, oh, we loved Peter. And I love Peter, mm-hmm. but I didn't know if people might see him as a little sinister or pushing his own agenda. And it was kind of funny because I was at a book club and the women said, let's talk about Peter. I love Peter. It was kind of funny. And they always... That's another fun thing about going to book clubs is they always surprise me at what they liked, what they didn't like.
What did they like about Peter?
They liked that he was clear and that he knew what his agenda was. There weren't a lot of gray areas for him. He was very clear with her about what he expected of her. He told her she had courage and tap into it, but do it now. We need it now.
Mm-hmm.
You can't think about it for 3 months. I need you to, you know, get that. And he was very clear and supportive and never wavered in what he felt was right and what he could do for her and what she could do for him.
Mm.
And he wasn't wishy-washy about it. Now, you may not have agreed with his agenda. She didn't really agree with his agenda. But you had to give the man that he knew where he was going, he knew where he wanted her to go, and, you know, he was really unambiguous. And there's a lot
they
to be said
that.
For clarity.
Yeah, yes,
they
true.
Like that. They like that. And they like that his message sort of, she used it in a different way, but she incorporated it, and it gave her strength in a lot of situations.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. I'm talking today with Christine Whitehead. Her new book, Tell Me When It Hurts, is out now, and you can find out more at tellmewhenithurtsbook.com. You know, it's a real art and craft to developing characters. And clearly, you really have tapped into something. I mean, your audience is raving about Peter, but really your two main characters are amazing characters. So have you done a lot of research and study into character development? We're getting a little on the technical side here.
I took every writing class that I could because you need to. I mean, I was, you may have guessed in reading the book, I'm a real Hemingway fan.
Yes, you are.
It always came as a huge relief to me to know how he agonized over, you know, one sentence, over, he rewrote and rearranged because I had this sense that, you know, if you're a real writer, it just flows out and you know,
have
it all
in your gift.
It's a gift, and you know, it comes out on the page, and of course you edit somewhat, but that it really is, you're either a writer or you're not, and it was really refreshing to know that, you know, you really, maybe there's a few people like that, or poets who are just natural poets, but most writers put a lot of sweat and research and energy into it, and I researched, did a fair amount of research on sheep ranching because Connor goes from being a corporate executive to having a sheep ranch in Wyoming. And so I did a lot of research about what it takes to raise sheep and what the process is and when you shear them and when you what kind of land they survive best on, and I did that. And I Archer was the easiest for me because I just knew her. I mean, I knew her. I knew how she'd feel in certain situations, and there were times when I'd write something and say, "No, she wouldn't have done that. She would do this." And Connor was a little harder, just because he's a man. I don't think quite like a man, but I based part of him on my significant other, who was a corporate person who became a, you know, kind of a rancher, and he was a little harder, but neither of them came with difficulty. I guess it's the old thing of you write what you know, so you tend to write people that you would enjoy meeting, and at least for your main characters, and they were two people whom I would enjoy meeting, and I found when I speak at libraries and at book clubs, I've found people who I found they really like them too. And someone said to me, "Well, you're doing a sequel, right? Like, pick up on some of the other people in the group and then introduce." They didn't want to let them go.
Yeah.
And I had someone who said to me, "I know they're living in Wyoming on that mountain, and Lauren, who's Connor's daughter, is visiting them, and she's a substitute daughter for Art. I just know it." And I found that people really like them.
It's always a great compliment when you hear calls for a sequel.
Yes, it was really fun, and someone said, do more with the group and pick out other people, so that was kind of fun to hear that, and it's kind of fun to hear what people enjoyed, and I had one woman who told me, she goes, "I was reading this part where it was one of the more action-packed parts." She goes, "Oh, I was so afraid I had to put it down and not read it," and that was nice because it meant it was developed enough that she felt that tension, and so that was kind of fun.
So will you be putting a sequel out? Maybe.
I haven't thought of one.
Mm-hmm.
I have started another book, and I have not thought of a sequel because I kind of sometimes it's like sometimes you need to leave well enough alone.
Yeah, right.
But I could, if I did, it would be not with Connor and Archer as the main characters, but they might make a cameo appearance if I did something with one of the other themes.
Great. So you will still be putting out more novels?
definitely.
Agree.
Definitely. Yeah. This one took a while to write, but I will. I learned a lot doing it. Learned a lot doing it, and just getting out to people was one of the biggest things I learned. I thought when I'd finished writing it, okay, the hard part's done, and then I realized, no, as I got going, it's not. You have to, unless you want it to sit in your attic, you have to go out and hope that someone will be interested in it, and you have to let them know about it, or they won't know.
It's almost like the work is just starting.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
It really is, and it's a matter of getting people the right audience, because it's not. Everyone has their own likes and dislikes, and fortunately, the people I've run into have been very favorable, but I never get over the fact that whenever I'm at a reading club, you know, someone will say, I could barely get through that boring thing. And someone else says, I loved it. I'm recommending it to all my friends. And that's kind of what makes it fun, makes horse racing, and that some people love something and some people go, no, that I didn't like that.
It's not for them. Well, I hear that you actually had a local news piece.
I did. I had I was fortunate to have a big feature article done in the Hartford Courant, which is my local newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman who wrote the article was named Carol Goldberg. She went to Smith, so that was fun. And
mm-hmm.
she wrote a nice feature about the book, about me. And I got so many comments back from it. I heard from people I hadn't heard from in years. A lot of people read the book as a result of it, and I got feedback from that, which was really fun to hear. And it's been a wonderful chance to meet people and talk to them and get their feedback. It's been really great.
That's wonderful. So do you go to some of the nationwide book conferences and expos? Is that important to you?
I do. I'm going to the Wesleyan conference in June,
mm-hmm.
which will be very interesting, and I'm sure I'll learn a lot from the real experts. And I'm going up to Vermont this summer. There's a major horse show that goes 6 weeks in Manchester, Vermont. So I'm getting a booth for a couple of weekends, and we're going to have the book for sale there. And it's a great audience for me because of the major horse theme in the book,
mm-hmm.
and Archer, the main character, is... She was an alternate on the U.S. equestrian team, and she and her daughter both loved horses, and that's kind of a common theme that goes through it. The book cover has the sort of the Western, as she's at the edge of the ranch, but she has on her English riding clothes and a gun.
Yeah.
And, so it's I had someone say, what did that mean? What did that mean? And then I had someone else say, how do you pick a cover? And that's a whole process in itself, but it was very fun to do. And so I'm looking forward. I really love meeting people before they've read the book, because hopefully they'll be interested enough to read it. And then I really love reconvening after they've read it and see what they think, because you can always learn. You always, things that you take for granted because you've read it so many times, it's very interesting to see if people react differently and what they liked and what worked for them and what themes resonated with them.
It's interesting that you like feedback. There are some authors that don't want to hear feedback.
No, I love feedback.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah, I would think that it's really very constructive, and you get to almost understand your story through different eyes.
Most definitely. And I've only had really one bad written review by someone on Amazon, which, you know, I thought, oh, that's going to hurt. And it was like, well, that's okay, because, you know, everybody has someone who it just is not their sort of book.
Yeah.
And they're not going to enjoy it. But I do like hearing the feedback, even if it's not positive, because that's a learning tool also. And I like knowing what they liked, what didn't work so well for them. No, I like feedback.
I would think so, absolutely. You know, we have not really addressed your passion and love for animals, and I really want to take some time to do that, because it is really a critical theme in this book, and I know you do a lot of work on the side, and animals are a huge part of your life, in particular horses and dogs. So tell us a little bit about your passion, when it started, and what your thoughts are on this relationship, this really unbelievable relationship that humans can have with these two types of animals.
Oh, it's so exciting. I began riding. I'd always loved horses. I was riding in college, and then I kind of put it aside when I got married. And then when I got divorced, I said, I'm doing something that I love. And I began riding again. And at the same time, a friend of mine was taking polo lessons, so I started that, and then I realized I got to ride a lot better to play polo. And so I was leased a horse, and I was riding twice a week, then three times. Then I bought a horse, and it just snowballed from there. And I just became so in love with everything connected with being around horses. And I love the team nature of polo itself. But the horses are just such a connection for me. They don't care what your day was like, what you were doing. They just are there. Mm. And I just find it so restorative. In the book, Annie, Archer's daughter, had a horse that she can no longer bear, Archer can no longer really bear to see because it's such a wound, because it was such a connection for them. But she can't sell the horse, she can't lease it because it's Annie's. Mm. And so it sort of is in, the horse is in limbo, Archer's in limbo. And when she is able to make peace with the guilt that she feels, and with the fact that she survived and Annie didn't, and she's able to come to peace with that, she's able to come at peace with the horse because she really believes that what's left of her daughter, that her soul is with that horse. Mm-hmm. And I completely believe in therapy of animals, in how by that unconditional presence that they have and that sixth sense that they have, you really can have a lot of healing for yourself. We all know about healing dogs that go into nursing homes and mm-hmm. people suddenly perk up and they start talking about their childhood pet and they have an interest they've never had. Autistic children all of a sudden perk up when you put them on a horse because it's a real connection for them, unlike a human one. And there's no criticism, there's no judgment, no just nothing but a positive feeling. And I always tell the story that 2 years ago I broke my collarbone in a, I wasn't playing polo, it was a weird, someone went by
not
a horse,
on horse
on a tractor, and my horse freaked, and it was very unexpected. And I was alone, my significant other was out of town. And the morning after it, I could barely move, and my dogs are always hysterical in the morning, and I crept down the stairs, and they just knew I could not, something was wrong,
something
and
was
I
wrong.
Could not
yeah.
cope with that kind of behavior. And I sat down, they just sat there and were dead silent until I was ready to deal with them. And
yeah.
I think they have this sixth sense, if you've
yeah.
created a bond with them, that is so restorative and so healing. And I have a blog on my website, and I'm hoping to develop it more thoroughly, but a couple of people have written of their experiences with their dogs and their pets, and it's just such a magnificent feeling when it works for you and your animal. And it's very moving.
It is moving. You know, I did some volunteer work at a addictions treatment facility that used equine therapy, and just saw unbelievable healings happen with people with the horses. And I'm so thrilled to hear that you're doing this kind of work, or that you're interested in it, because it is so powerful.
It is very powerful, and they now are doing in prisons with the animals, creating an empathy, which some people never really have been able to develop due to their past or their situation.
Yes.
And it's a real interest of mine.
So will the animal theme always be there in your writing?
Absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely, yes. In fact, it's already starting in my next book. I've outlined it out, so there will be horses, there will be dogs, and they'll definitely be in it.
So what is next for you? Do you have a handle on what your next project will be released?
Yeah, well, I don't know when it'll be released, but I've got two chapters done, and I, for some reason, I come up with titles first because it inspires me, because I came up with Tell Me When It Hurts when the book was very young, and I've been asked what that means or what it meant to me, and I can talk about that, but the next book is called Center My Love, and it's... I like working in limited times. This will be a year in another woman's life, and she will be middle-aged, have trials and tribulations, have a child who is alive and well but sullen, and love will come into her life where there hasn't been any. And so I've got it a little bit sketched out, and I learned a lot writing this book, both about writing as well as about what it takes to get published, to be out there and get a little bit noticed. And it's quite fascinating.
The first book is a real education process.
It really is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we definitely look forward to Sender My Love. It sounds like you love is going to be a common theme as well.
It no question.
Yeah. Yeah.
No question.
Well, you have to tell us now what Tell Me When It Hurts means to you, since you brought it up.
It really is about, you know, we all have some limit of how much pain we can take. So the doctor will say, well, tell me when it hurts, when he's pressing on this, that, or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, Archer could take a lot of pain, but at some point she gave in. She pretty much collapsed. And so Connor had a different kind of pain. Lauren, the daughter without her real father in her life, had a certain kind of pain. And it's about we all have that level. And, you know, it may not show on the outside. You may be able to trudge through the day. You may be able to drink at night and get up and go to work. But, you know, we all want to say, you know, I want to tell you it's hurting. It's hurting now. And it was just, you know, we all have that level, and it just depends on where yours is.
Wonderful. Well, you know, Christine, our time is coming to an end. I want to make sure we mention your website, tellmewhenithurtsbook.com, and lots of information up there. You are blogging, as you mentioned, so definitely want to steer our listeners to check out your site. And your book can be purchased through your website, or is it just through Amazon?
Yep. At the website will link you to Amazon.
Okay.
And it's going to be sold in Barnes & Noble probably within 2 months. They just set me up so that I could go through them, and then it'll go into Borders as well.
Oh, great, great.
So that's good.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me on your show.
Yes, thank you so much, Christine. And I just wanted to offer you the last little bit of time here, last few moments, to just share any final thoughts you would with your audience today.
Well, I think that it's an easy read. It's a fun read, despite some of the subject matter, because the focus is on healing. The focus isn't on pain. It's also a book that I found men enjoy because there's enough action in it in terms of her secret vigilante life that I found some men that I wouldn't have thought would have liked it have enjoyed it. And I think it's all about reconnection, new beginnings, second chances.
There's a lot of inspiration in this book.
There is, and I hope that people enjoy it. They seem to be enjoying it as simply a read that's interesting and one that makes them feel good at the end of it.
Absolutely. Christine, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, you take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, listeners, that's been Christine Whitehead. Her new book, Tell Me When It Hurts, is available now, and the website is tellmewhenithurtsbook.com. And like we mentioned, available on Amazon, there's a link from her website as well as through, can be ordered through local booksellers, and in the coming months at Barnes & Noble, too. So it's out there. Do check it out. I want to thank you so much for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live, listening to this great interview with Christine today. I'm Juanita Watson. And until next time.